you're going to say, oh my goodness, that is outrageously high. I understand that. But I just get the sense that last year's team was a whole heck of a lot better than their final record showed. Now it's about taking the next step. Hello and welcome to Always College Football. I'm Greg McElroy. Thanks so much for being with us. Today is Thursday, May 9th. Tomorrow's my birthday, ironically enough. I'm 36, so I feel ancient. But at the same time, I also kind of feel like there's a lot of life to look forward to, probably with where things are going with the college football playoff this year, the expanded playoff, the realignment. I feel uplifted. So my last show as a 35-year-old, we're going to get to the mailbag. We're going to interact with our listeners. Really looking forward to a lot of the questions that y'all have submitted. We appreciate so much all of you guys submitting questions over the last few weeks. We've consolidated some of the best, and we plan on answering some of those today. We also are going to look back. For the last 3 years, some of these coaches are in a place where it's go time or no time. Like, are these coaches positioning their programs to potentially chase a championship? We're going to put a percentage on the likelihood that the coaching carousel candidates of 2022 ultimately win a championship at their current location. So we will address that as well. And there's one on there that is actually at a new place that was hired in 2022, but has since been hired elsewhere. So we'll discuss his probability as well. I would like to continue to encourage all of you. We've seen all of you reaching out, leaving ratings, leaving reviews. It means a lot to us. It really does. Because our show, we had 4.9 or 5 stars for like forever. And then one team was left out of the playoff and our ratings suffered as a result. We had some really, really rogue fans from a particular fan base that have decided to take to the show and rate it 1 star. So we appreciate y'all fighting back. It means a lot. We've noticed it and we appreciate you guys very much for basically defending the show, because it's not our fault. It's not always college football's fault that Florida State was left out of the playoff. It's not our fault. But either way, I digress. It's going to be a great show today. Look back at the coaching carousel of 2022, where they're at right now and where they're going, and then we'll answer some questions in the mailbag. Time flies when you're having fun, doesn't it? I mean, I love doing this show. I love talking college football with you guys. I love the interaction that we have. And one of our favorite things that we discuss is the coaching carousel. And we feel like coaches are moving more than ever before, but it's always kind of nice to let the dust settle. Because it's easy to get reactionary, and we do this too. I mean, we fall victim just like y'all do to giving the coaching grade and all these things. But how do you really know? I mean, how do you know without a shadow of a doubt that this guy is going to be super successful at his place unless you watch him for a couple of years, right? Like when Lincoln Riley went from Oklahoma to SC, everyone's like, oh my gosh, home run, couldn't miss it. Unbelievable, right? With the exception of some Oklahoma fans that were certainly disappointed and mad and angry and talked about how Lincoln wasn't the right guy, all this other stuff, fine. But for the most part, it was universally accepted as like the greatest hire of all time. Now we fast forward a couple of years, and how do you feel today? How do you feel now? And that's why I think it's kind of fun to revisit some of the hires from a few years back. And while they might have been qualified as home runs then, maybe you don't feel that way today. So let's dive in. Maybe the most controversial hire, or among the most controversial hires, 2022 was a controversial year as far as coaches leaving great jobs for other great jobs. It's kind of unprecedented, though, that we saw a coach leave Notre Dame. And in particular, Brian Kelly, a guy from Massachusetts, from the Northeast, has spent all of his time, all of his coaching career north of the Mason-Dixon line. And yet, he decides to take LSU, a place that has won national championships with Nick Saban, who is a phenomenal coach. And as you guys know, I think he's the greatest of all time. Ed Ogeron and Les Miles, good coaches. Love them, respect them. But I think Brian Kelly's probably a little better coach, frankly, than both Les Miles and than Ed Ogeron. The problem is he hasn't quite gotten it done yet. So far, his record is 20-7. He's 12-4. He has been to an SEC championship, which is, I think, a pretty significant achievement, given that was year one. He does have a Heisman Trophy winner, and LSU does have 4 national championships in their history. I referenced it. 1 with O, 1 with Les. That was back in 2007, and 1 with Nick Saban back in 2003 and then won a long, long time ago. So this is a place where you can do it. And I think that's part of the reason why Brian Kelly took the job. He recognized that his pathway to a title, that's the one box left unchecked right now for Brian Kelly and his illustrious coaching career. The one box left unchecked is that national championship. And I think he recognized that while he could get Notre Dame to the playoff, he was having a difficult time getting them over the hump when playing against the teams from the SEC, some of the teams that they would see in the Big Ten. He had a difficult time with his roster, the way it was constructed, competing against the best in college football. And what we've seen already, at least in the first couple of years, he's been able to do that. He just hasn't done it quite consistently enough. And last year, the defense just completely falling apart. But when we go through this exercise, a lot of this is going to be about the place more so than the coach. I know that's going to sound a little backwards, right? Because you're only as good as your coaching. You're only as good as the guy leading the team, leading the program. But a lot of it's about the place. And frankly, if Brian Kelly wins a national championship at LSU, I think he will immediately become the second best coach in LSU history. Now, maybe there's some that would maybe push back on that, guys that coached back 50, 60 years ago, perhaps. But I think Nick Saban, given his run of success, was among the best, if not the best. I think Les Miles is a solid coach. I don't think he's elite. I think Ed Ogeron, solid coach. I don't think he's elite. I think Brian Kelly is elite. That's why I think the percentage chance that he will win a national championship at LSU is 50%. Now, remember, people are going to hear that, and they're going to say 50%. I mean, that seems a little low, or perhaps seems a little high. Winning a national championship is outrageously difficult. Outrageously difficult. And frankly, I think 2019 LSU was about as talented a team as you could ever construct, and Ed Ogeron deserves immense credit for constructing that team and that roster the way he did and adjusting his philosophy and all these other things. But I can tell you this, I think in 2007, LSU won a national championship in spite of their head coach. No disrespect to Les Miles, just my personal opinion. So I think this place and the players that you have access to is about as good as it gets. So I think Brian Kelly, before he shuts it down at LSU, there is a 50% chance that he wins a title. Let's move on to Lincoln Riley. Referenced him a little earlier. A controversial hire for some, but for the most part, A-plus rated hire for pretty much everybody. And it understandably so too, right? The guy is unbelievable offensively. He's already had a Heisman Trophy winner at USC. And remember, if Caleb Williams doesn't get hurt in the Pac-12 title game against Utah, did they get to the playoff that year? And with a quarterback like that, what are the chances? What are the chances? So I think if we look at it right now, in the prisoner of the moment mindset, a lot of people would say Lincoln Riley's percentage likelihood of winning a national championship is below 10, probably single digits, because clearly, based on his track record at Oklahoma and his early track record at USC, defense is a huge issue. Well, I would push back on that because I look at who he just hired in Danton Lynn. I look at their philosophy moving forward. And while I think that Alex Grinch did some good things, I think philosophically, he was too aggressive. I think there were too many chances taken and they occasionally got a little unsound. And as a result, the tackling suffered. And as a result, the defense suffered. So I am cautiously optimistic that he has nailed this most recent hire defensively. I feel really strongly about it. I love Danton Lynn. I think he's a great coach. I think they're going to implement a great philosophy. And I think they're going to continue to attract players because they have deep resources in NIL. And playing in the Big Ten, I think, will help prepare them, if they get to the playoff, to be extremely competitive if they get there. So while this number might be high for some, given some of the inadequacies we've seen on one side of the ball from Lincoln Riley, I'm going to put the likelihood that he wins a title at SC at 20%. I feel like that's pretty good, by the way. I think that's a pretty good number, given the fact that SC has not won a national championship in 20 years. Feels like yesterday, but it's been 20 years. And they haven't really been in the title hunt in a really long time. But I think Lincoln Riley, he's going to be able to attract offensive playmakers. He's going to be able to score. It's just how will he adapt into a new league that is more about the line of scrimmage and more about the ground and pound emphasis. So I think he's going to do great. And I think Lincoln Riley is well positioned to, in a 12-team playoff era, make some noise and potentially win one here down the road. We'll move next to Marcus Freeman. Marcus Freeman stepped into what I think is a really good spot. But in many ways, he was the right guy for the time. That's not a slight towards Brian Kelly whatsoever. I think the world of Brian Kelly. I just told you a couple minutes ago, I think Brian Kelly has a 50% chance of winning a national championship at LSU. But what I didn't tell you is that I think Marcus Freeman's ability to attract top-tier playmakers to Notre Dame might be even greater than that of his predecessor. And if you look at some of their recruiting and the way they've been able to attack the portal, I think they're well positioned to fare very, very well here in the near future. Now, they're 19-7, and like I said earlier, sometimes it's about the place more so than the person. I think Marcus Freeman is a big-time head coach. I just think it's been very challenging for Notre Dame when they get into the playoff. And now in a 12-team playoff, remember, they will not, at least depending on how long we keep this format, they will not get a first-round bye because they will not be a conference champion. Can they win a game in the first round, second round, semis, and national championship? Can they win four consecutive games against championship-caliber competition? That's a legitimate question. We know they can get there. I feel strongly that they can get there and will get there. They might even get there this year. But when they get there, what will they do? Because they've fallen far short of expectations in some of those matchups in the past. Now, I have to put the percentage chance that he will win a national championship at Notre Dame at 10%. Still, I think pretty good. Pretty good. But when you have to play in round one, Clemson in round one, perhaps. Maybe in round two, you have to go play Alabama. In round three, you have to play Georgia. And then for the national championship, you have to play Ohio State. Will Notre Dame's roster be deep enough? Will they be talented enough to be able to play up to the level of competition multiple times throughout a deeper playoff format? So 10% is where I put it for Marcus Freeman, but I still think that's a pretty fair number. And I just cannot drive home the point enough, the amount of respect I have for Marcus Freeman and the roster and the talent and the way he's been able to attract players here these last couple of years. Let's move on to Billy Napier. 11-14 overall record, 6-10 in the SEC. Florida has three national championships in their history, 96, 2006, and 2008. And I think a big part of this one, like I said, it's a lot about the place. Can Florida win a national championship? Absolutely. Has Florida displayed any semblance of patience whatsoever when it comes to their coaches over the last 10 years? The answer is absolutely not. Since Urban Meyer left, they have been running through coaches. And the first sign that a coach is maybe not on the upward trajectory, not immediately competing for championships, like they're looking for something better. It's almost to the point when they were winning, even with Jim McElwain, they weren't thrilled because they weren't scoring enough points. It wasn't sexy enough. So I think the place has become more challenging because the expectations are outrageously high. And I'm not saying they should settle. Florida should never settle. You are the Florida Gators. But at this point, are they going to be patient enough with Billy Napier to build the roster the way that he needs to build it to contend for a championship? As of right now, I don't think they're going to be patient enough because I already see people saying, oh, Billy's going to be out of there by the end of September. Now, I don't agree with that sentiment. I think Florida's going to be dangerous this year. Now, will they be a factor in the SEC? Probably not. Will they win enough games for him to be retained? I don't know. But I do know this. I know that the likelihood of him winning a national championship is incredibly small at Florida right now, because I just don't think they're going to give him enough time. Not saying they should, not saying they will, not saying what the amount of time is that it's appropriate, but I feel like the situation that he inherited at Florida was atrocious as far as personnel. They didn't have depth. They didn't have quality. He brought in a couple good transfers. They've won a couple games, sure, and they've beaten good teams in some cases, but the consistency has not been there. So I'll put the percentage chance that he'll win a national championship at Florida at 2% right now. I just hope Florida's patient enough, and I hope to be able to revisit this discussion next year after he maybe breaks through and has a surprisingly good season. I really want that for Billy Napier, and I really want that for the University of Florida. Move on to Brent Venables. Year one, not great. Year two, much better. 16-10 overall, 10-8 in the Big 12, has not been to a Big 12 title game, but Oklahoma has won seven national championships, their last one coming nearly 25 years ago. Back in the year 2000. Remember it vividly, but how many times has Oklahoma been in the mix? Whether it's playoff bursts, whether it's BCF championship game appearances, they were in one in 08. They were in one in 2004. I mean, they've been a fixture in the national spotlight for quite some time. What I'm really interested in with Brent Venables, and I'm really frankly interested in with Oklahoma, is how capable is Oklahoma right now at competing in the Southeastern Conference? Because I really like Oklahoma this year. I've said that before. I think their talent's good on all three levels defensively. I think they have a good quarterback. It might take a little time before he becomes a star, but I think he's got the talent to do so. And I really think they have great wide receivers. I think Burks is about to absolutely blow the world away there at wide receiver. So I'm very optimistic about what Oklahoma is going to be. I just think the schedule this year is outrageously difficult. Really, really tough. So I look at everything, and people are probably going to say, oh, that's a really low number. I think the likelihood of winning a national championship at Oklahoma right now for Brent Venables is 10%, which to me feels like a pretty good number. Because right now, if I were to rank the SEC 1 through 16 heading into 24, I have Oklahoma somewhere in the middle, which means they're probably in the vicinity of an 8-4, 7-5 football team. In order to get to the playoff, I think you need to be at least 10-2. And depending on the year, maybe 9-3 gets you there. And depending on how things sort themselves out for Oklahoma, maybe they can get there sooner than later. But I think there's going to be a little bit of growing pains as they transition into the league. And as a result, I'm going to put that number a little lower than I probably would if they were to remain in the Big 12. Because I think in the Big 12, they have a much better chance of having easier access to the playoff. And I just don't know if it's going to happen on an annual basis in the SEC the way it happened on an annual basis throughout their run on the last 25 years of dominance in the Big 12. So I put it at 10% for Brent Venables and Oklahoma. Let's move on to Dan Lanning. Now, this is the one caveat. I've been saying the place. Oregon's never won a national championship. Oregon's played for two back in 2011 and 2014. A lot of people thought last year they had one of the best teams in the country. Understandably so. But they do lose quite a bit, but they've been able to adequately replace. And I think the world of NIL has been very beneficial to Dan Lanning, but I also think Dan Lanning is a phenomenal coach. I mean, this guy is a game changer. He's 22-5 overall. He's 15-3 in the Pac-12. He has a Pac-12 title game appearance, and he also had a Heisman finalist and a first-round pick in Bo Nix. So all that will help Dan Lanning moving forward. But if you look at how active they've been, being able to attract players, be it the portal or via the high school ranks, Dan Lanning is absolutely killing it as far as talent retention and talent attraction. Absolutely killing it. So, if you were to sort them out right now in 2024, how far down the list in the Big Ten do you have to go before you get to Oregon? Because I don't think you can make a case for Oregon being any worse than number 3 in the pack in the Big Ten right now. I don't know how you can do it. I mean, Oregon brings back so much. They have a veteran quarterback that's going to fit in the system beautifully. They got great playmakers, great additions made on the outside. You got Tez Johnson back at wide receiver. You bring in Evan Stewart. I mean, they have brought in a lot of talent. They got some really good second-year players along the line of scrimmage defensively that I think is only going to continue to propel them moving forward. We've seen them compete at the top of the game for a long time. They're not going anywhere. Dan Lanning, I think, has a very strong chance of bringing the first national championship home to the Oregon Ducks. That's why I am putting his percentage chance of winning a natty at Oregon at 40%. Brian Kelly's at 50. That's the highest we have so far. We've seen some at 10. We've seen some at 2. We've seen some at 20. I think Dan Lanning's going to get it done. And I think it could be sooner than later with the trajectory that his program is currently on. Let's go next to the guy that Dan Lanning replaced at Oregon, that's Mario Cristobal, who decided to go home back to Miami, where he has compiled so far a 12-13 record, a 6-10 record in the ACC. He has one bowl appearance, but this is Miami, and they have won 5 national championships in their history. Now, I look at Miami and Clemson and Florida State in the ACC. First of all, I think the ACC is really good. I think it's really solid. Didn't even list NC State, didn't even list Virginia Tech. These are really good programs, really solid. But if you look at the roster that Mario Cristobal has this year, he has the best roster right now in the ACC, right now. Now, right now, he has the best roster. Now, what does that mean? Will he ultimately be able to get to the playoff? Will he ultimately get a first-round bye by winning the ACC? I think all of that is possible, and maybe, if the ball bounces the right way, probable. for them this year. I think you can make a case they have the best quarterback in the ACC. I think you can make a case that they have arguably the most talented weapons in the ACC. I think you can make a case that you have the best defensive lineman in the ACC in Reuben Bain. I think they've been able to adequately replace some of the pieces on the defensive side that they needed to replace. Like, I am super bullish on what Mario's building. I think he's got a great feel for the portal. I think he's got a great feel for recruiting. He's done a great job in high school recruiting as well. I think Mario Cristobal is likely going to be in position to win a national championship at Miami here very soon. And I think because they're in the ACC, I feel even better about their candidacy. And knowing that Mario Cristobal has played against the likes of some of the teams he's seen in the past, he's beaten Ohio State, he's coached at Oregon, he's been in the SEC, he knows what it takes when you get there. So I'm going to put the percentage chance that he wins a national championship at Miami at 25%. You're going to say, oh my goodness, that is outrageously high. I understand that. But I just get the sense that last year's team was a whole heck of a lot better than their final record showed. Now it's about taking the next step. And this number could shrink drastically if we visit the next year and they haven't taken the big step as far as their win-loss record is concerned. There's no reason why they shouldn't be in the playoff hunt this year. If they're not, then it's reflection on what goes on game day and the decisions that are made on game day, which ultimately falls on the head coach. But Mario Cristobal, as far as how he's handled the offseason, they are primed and ready to spring here in 2024. And then finally, a guy that was hired in 2022, but he has a new job. That's Kalen DeBoer, who was hired at Washington last year, or in 2022, led Washington to the national championship game where he became the runner-up. He compiled a 25-3 record at UW, including 16-2 in the Pac-12. Along the way, he is 3-0 against Dan Lanning, 2-0 against Steve Sarkisian, guys that are considered among the best in their field. He's been able to take his team and elevate them to a level that I don't think any of us thought they could get to. They obviously won the Pac-12 championship game. They've won a game in the college football playoff, beating Texas the way they did there in the Sugar Bowl. And he now takes over at a place that has 18 national championships claimed. The last one was a few years back. It was in 2020. But he immediately steps into a roster that is deeper and probably a little bit more complete than the roster than he had at Washington. Now, I don't think he has the weapons that he had at Washington, but I do think his personnel on the defensive side is drastically better at multiple spots. I also think the resources that he has access to and the players that are in his own backyard and the culture and the established program that he takes over, it's a little bit like the conversation that we had about Brian Kelly. Brian Kelly steps into a place, the likelihood of him winning a national championship, outrageously high. Why? Just look at the guys that have won it in the past. Well, I believe Kalen DeBoer will win a national championship at Alabama, and I don't think it's going to take very long. This guy in his career has only two losses against ranked opponents. Two. One was against Michigan, and the other one he was at Fresno State. He does have some wins against ranked opponents when he was at Fresno State, I might add. But he was undefeated at Washington against ranked opponents up until his final game as the Washington head coach. He can do more with less, and he's proven that at both Fresno, at Washington, and then previously when he was the coordinator at Indiana and some of his previous stops. The guy's won national championships before. Granted, it was at the NAIA level, but he actually knows a little bit better than most about what it's going to take to compete in a 3 or 4 game playoff to ultimately win a national championship. I'm putting the percentage chance that he'll win a natty at Alabama at 75%. I think it's highly likely. And with the keys of the castle that he just inherited, I think he's going to get it done probably sooner than later.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships, your skills, your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/network. Now, let's talk about the play of the week. The pressure to follow up Hypnotic and Cognac weighing heavy on the team. Hypnotic was in the cup, blue and ready for the play. And boom! Añejo Tequila came in with a smooth assist to Hypnotic's tropical fruit finish. Shaken, strained, poured. It was green and good! The playmaking splash shifted the tempo. Another great cocktail from the Hypnotic team. Every season is Hypnotic and Tequila season. Hypnotic Liqueur, Bardstown, Kentucky, 17% alcohol by volume. Hypnotic reminds you to think wisely, drink wisely.
As always, we appreciate you guys submitting questions to our mailbag, alwayscollegefootball@gmail.com. You can also submit questions via our social media, alwayscfb on both Instagram and on Twitter. So follow us, shoot us a question, and we will get it into the show. Now is the time we really attack the mailbag here in the summer. When news is a little bit slower, it's a great opportunity for us to visit with you guys and address some of the questions that you might have. So Jack, where are we going?
All right, first one today is from Waymond. With all the talk of a new Super League, how many legitimate programs are there to even be considered in such a league? Do you think there's more than 40?
I think it's a great question. Now, personally, I think there should be more than 40. But if you look at the SEC and the Big Ten, that's comprised of 34 teams right there alone, okay? There are 7 or 8 from the ACC that I think can play at the highest possible level, maybe more. There are 5 or 6 from the Big 12 that I think with the right resources and the right opportunity could elevate as well. Now, is every team in the SEC and the Big 10, are every single team resourced well enough to win a national championship? No, they're not. But if you look at Major League Baseball, are the Twins and the Rays and the Athletics resourced the same way as the Yankees, the Dodgers, the Mets, and the Boston Red Sox? No. So I think if you look at the power structure that is, you're not going to just kick teams out of the league. You're not going to say, oh, well, Vandy doesn't, you know, they don't compete at the highest possible level on a week-to-week basis, so they're out. No, I don't see it happening like that. So if it were to go to the Super League model, I can't imagine a scenario in which there was a power team left out. And I think we didn't even list Notre Dame in there as well. So, I mean, I think you're looking at least 50 teams, probably closer to 60 when you really get down to it.
All right, up next is from Joe in Toronto. If we're going to expand conferences and expand the playoffs until everyone gets a trophy, why should I even care about the regular season until Thanksgiving?
Well, Joe, I think it depends on who you're a fan of. Because with that attitude, if you're a fan of UCF, if you're a fan of Houston, if you're a fan of NC State, if you're a fan of Georgia Tech, if you're a fan of Arizona, then why did you ever care about college football? Because I think if you have that perspective, if that's the thought process that you have, then the only thing that matters is a national championship, and there's no reason why anyone else should even put a tee in the ground. Like, what's the point? Because, I mean, right now, okay, if you're a fan of, say, Ohio State, Bama, Georgia, Michigan, you know, the haves, okay, does the regular season become slightly less important in your eyes? Perhaps, because you ultimately have to play your way out of the playoff if you're one of those teams, if you have the rosters that those teams have. So I understand why you might not be a huge fan of it if you're a fan of the Super Blue Bloods, but this expanded playoff has allowed massive access to teams that have never had access before. Like, when has NC State been within a game or two in November from making the college football playoff? Well, that becomes a reality in the current format. When has Arizona even come close to get into the college football playoff? Yeah, they've been to New Year's Six bowl games back in 2014. They went to the Fiesta Bowl, but they've never come close to knocking down the door and making their way into the playoff. And guess what? If the playoff were 12 teams last year and realignment had already occurred, Arizona would have been in as the winners of the Big 12. Based on where they finished out, so they would have gotten a first round bye. So I think it just depends on the perspective that you look at. I personally don't think this is some participation trophy. I think getting to the playoff and expanding the playoff has allowed a lot more teams to have access, and it makes more games in November meaningful. Because if you're looking at it from a playoff-only perspective, there are six or seven games in November that have a massive impact on who's going to make the playoff. Now, there might be 15 or 16 games that could determine who gets at the conference championship. And if you lose that game, you're on the outside looking in and trying to play your way back in to a potential at-large selection. So I think it depends a little bit on your perspective, because for over 100 years, we've been playing college football and very few teams have ever had a chance to compete for a championship. Now a whole lot more teams have that chance, and it'll be interesting to see what they do with it.
All right, next one is from a longtime listener and longtime emailer, John in Colorado. He asks, if Colorado is to make a bowl game this season, what are the six wins? Can Shedeur Sanders be the number one overall NFL draft pick, as that's what he's shooting for, if Colorado doesn't even make a bowl game?
I could be really hard to be the number one overall draft pick if you don't make a bowl game, but I think that he's going to be well positioned to get picked really high. I think Carson Beck's probably the guy to beat at the number one overall spot, but I digress. Let's talk about how we get Colorado to a bowl game right now. I think there are four must-win games on the schedule. Absolutely must-win, cannot lose them, okay? That'd be North Dakota State, that's in the opener, at Nebraska, at Colorado State, and against Cincinnati at home. Those four games are absolutely must-win, okay? Must-win. If you lose one of those games, then you can still get to a bowl game, but your 50-50 games become much, much more difficult. So I think you win those four games that I just listed, North Dakota State, Nebraska, Colorado State, and then Cincinnati. By the way, I think winning at Nebraska is going to be a real tall order, but I think it's a must-win game if Colorado wants to go bowling. Then you look at the 50-50 games. You have to win two of the four 50-50 games. Here's the problem. Three of your four 50-50 games are on the road, at UCF, at Texas Tech, and at Kansas. Now, you get Baylor at home. I also think that's a 50-50 game, but you obviously have to win two of those four. Because tell me this, as a Colorado fan or as a fan of college football, how confident are you in Colorado being able to stop the ground and pound against Kansas State, the ground and pound against Utah, the ground and pound and the reigning Doak Walker Award winner in Ollie Gordon against Oklahoma State? I think it's pretty unlikely that you handle those three teams because they're going to ground and pound it. And how good do you feel about going on the road to Arizona, a team that beat you convincingly last year, and handling your business on the road there? I don't feel real good about those four. So I think that's four losses on the schedule immediately. So you got four must wins, North Dakota State, at Nebraska, at Colorado State, and then Cincinnati at home. And you have to win two of your four 50-50s. Baylor at home, at UCF, at Texas Tech, and at Kansas, which will be really, really difficult, but I think they can get there because they have great horsepower and they have a lot of talent. It's just about being able to stop the run and being a lot better along both lines of scrimmage.
All right, last one is from Kim from Wyoming. What are the chances the Pac-12 teams come in and are instantly the cream of the crop in the Big 12? There's a lot to like about Utah. Arizona was, of course, great last year, and Colorado has one of the nation's best players.
I think it's certainly possible. I feel pretty good, though, about some of the teams that were in the Big 12 last year. I think the Big 12 was an underrated league. If you get beyond Texas and Oklahoma, obviously they're not there anymore. But I think collectively, it was pretty underrated. I think Kansas State's got a chance to be really, really good. Avery Johnson in a quarterback, new OC, but they've done a decent job of adding a couple pieces in the portal. And Kansas State, yeah, they'll lose a few guys up front offensively. That's a challenge. But Kansas State and Chris Lyman, they're always going to be rock solid. Oklahoma State has everybody back. They have everybody back. So, I mean, they have a lot of offensive line back. They have a seventh-year quarterback. They have the best running back in college football. They got all three wide receivers that are difference makers. They got all three levels defensively that should be a lot more comfortable in that style defense that they implemented last year. That 3-3-3 with two corners on the outside. Like, I think Oklahoma State, I think you can make a case that Oklahoma State actually has the most answers in the Big 12 right now based on those coming into the season with questions. There's not many as it relates to Oklahoma State. And then finally, I mean, Kansas, and they have a super dynamic weapon at running back, super dynamic weapon at quarterback. So, I mean, I think Kansas is one of those teams that's super dangerous. Now, can they win the league? That's to be determined, but I do think they'll be a dangerous team that nobody's going to really want to mess with and should probably be in the top 25 at some point as the season rolls along.
Robert Half research indicates 9 out of 10 hiring managers are having difficulty hiring. If you have open roles, chances are you're feeling this too. That's why you need Robert Half. Our specialized recruiting professionals engage with our proprietary AI to connect businesses of all sizes with highly skilled talent in finance and accounting, technology, marketing and creative, legal, and administrative and customer support. At Robert Half, we know talent. Visit roberthalf.com today.
Hi, it's Mike Greenberg letting you know ESPN Bet is ready to take you through all the biggest sports moments this spring. The official sportsbook of ESPN has exclusive offers and markets from Scott Van Pelt, Stephen A. Smith, and me, plus many more. From the playoff intensity to finally getting out to the ballpark, there's no better time for sports fans. Sign up today. New users get a bet reset up to $1,000 in bonus bets if your first bet doesn't win. Download ESPN Bet today. What a play.
Must be 21 plus and present in select states. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Terms and conditions apply. See app for details.
That'll do it for us here at Always College Football. Please continue to like, rate, and subscribe to the show wherever you get your show. Everyone that has tried to sabotage the rating, we are going to bounce back strong, man. We're going to bounce back strong, and we appreciate all of you guys for defending the show the way you have in the comments and in the reviews. We appreciate you guys very much. You guys are loyal to the Always College Football family, and we will not forget you. For all of us here at Always College Football, from Mark, Jake, Jack, the other Jack, I'm Greg. We hope you have an amazing day. And remember, it's always college football. Hey guys, it's Greg McElroy. Thanks for watching Always College Football. Make sure you like, rate, and subscribe to ESPN's YouTube channel and wherever you listen to your podcasts.